The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Bacchus and Beery Wine Radio with husband and wife vintners Roger and Donna Beery. If you've ever been interested in starting your own winery or just learning a little more about wine and what goes on behind the bottle, stay tuned for the next hour. Now, here are Roger and Donna.
Welcome to this live Boxing Day edition of Bacchus and Beery Wine Radio. We're glad you joined us. We've got a fantastic guest in about 15 minutes, Suzanne Pfeiffer-Pavitt of Date Night Wines. And so we'll be talking with her about a whole variety of things. And Donna, what's in your glass?
Well, I hope everyone had a very merry Christmas. I hope they made a lot of memories with family and friends. And in honor of our guest, Suzanne, I'm having a Pfeiffer-Pavitt 2011 Date Night Cabernet Sauvignon.
And this is really a beautiful Cabernet with a lot of layered richness and depth, and we'll talk more about that with our guests. But this is really a beautiful and very typical sort of, you know, Napa Valley rich Cabernet. So we had a fun Christmas evening. We'll share with you that.
We actually started celebrating Christmas 5 days ago. We've been celebrating for 5 days.
Well, we have different parts of the family. But last night, you all have heard us talk about our little wine label project, J. Cage Cellars, and we got to spend it with our wine partners and their family, and we just had a wonderful time. Our son, the winemaker from Northern California, is in, and so we all had a blast. And Kathleen and Jeff, if you're listening, we want to thank you. It was a fun night. You know things are going good when you stand out in the backyard and start sabering champagne. And for those of you that don't know what sabering champagne is, Google it and you will see. And that's when the fun starts.
Well, but we're in Texas and we don't have a saber handy, so we just used a hunting knife.
Yeah, a hunting knife. But it worked. It worked. So we've got some things to talk about before our guest joins us. But, you know, we have never really encouraged phone calls. And if you're listening and you want to call in and ask some questions about wine, we would love to hear from you. And you can call us at 866-472-5788. Again, that's 866-472-5788. And just call in for the next few minutes with just about, you know, anything wine related that you want to talk about. So this morning I was laying in bed, and an article came across my iPad that I thought was sort of appropriate this day after Christmas, and that was, what kind of wine would Jesus have drunk? And of course, his first miracle was turning water into wine. But the wine, according to this article, that Jesus and his and other people of that era drank would have been quite a bit different than the wines that we drink today.
Well, I think it would have been red wine, personally.
Probably. But so there was this article from NPR, and it quotes a gentleman named Patrick McGovern, who is a professor at the University of Pennsylvania in archaeology, and he's known as the Indiana Jones of ancient fermented beverages. Now, I wonder what my father would have said when I went to college and said, I'm going to study ancient fermented beverages. But
probably about the same thing that my father would have said when I said I wanted to be a winemaker or go into hospitality. He would have said, get back to the business school, young lady.
Exactly. But so basically what they tell us, and they know this from a number of sources, that we'll talk a little bit more about in a minute, is that wine back then was, of course, not in bottles. It was either in barrels or very large ceramic containers that would hold, you know, 50 to 60 gallons of wine. And, of course, the wine would have a tendency to go bad, and so they wanted to preserve it as long as possible. And so they added a lot of stuff to wine back then. And according to Dr. McGovern, it could be laced with additives like tree resins, peppers, and capers.
Well, I know that sounds dreadful, but it was a good alternative when considering the drinking water was so unhealthy to drink and could kill you. So that's why people drank wine.
Yeah. And so as he said, quote, the idea was not to cover up the signs of a deteriorating wine, although that was added incentive, but to keep the wines for longer time and to produce new exciting tastes for jaded palates. And, you know, it's kind of, you don't think of people living 2,000 years ago as having jaded palates, but I guess some of them did.
I guess so. I don't know.
Yes. So going on with this, you know, same sort of subject matter here, I found an article in researching, you know, wines of, you know, ancient era. Yeah, I just found it fascinating. I hope I'm not boring you with it, but I think it's pretty interesting. But there was a dig in Israel last year in the ruins of the Canaanite palace. And so they thought they had excavated most of this palace, and then sort of towards the end of the excavation, they find a room. And this room was a giant wine cellar. And this wine cellar dates back to 1700 BC. So really, really long time ago. And they found more than 500 gallons of wine would have been stored in this room. Now, again, it would have been stored in these large amphoras and that sort of stuff. So when they take that clay from the amphoras, they can analyze it, Donna, and find out exactly what was in the wine. And that's how they know about juniper berries and tree resins and all that. And
all the additives, yeah.
All the additives. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the tartaric acid that is left behind from the wine is the telltale sign that there was wine left in those amphoras. But, you know, I think it's, you know, pretty fascinating that, you know, that they're, you know, making wine 3,700 years ago and storing it. Apparently, this home was about 8,000 square feet and was buried in rubble by a natural disaster about 3,700 years ago. But again, I want to encourage you to call in with any wine questions.
Or a happy holiday memory.
Or a happy holiday
memory. That you just created yesterday.
Or some other memory that that wine helped to amplify, or wine was a part of. And again, you can reach us at 866-472-5788. Again, 866-472-5788.
Well, did you create a happy holiday memory this year?
Well, you know, it's just the whole event, especially at Jeff and Kathleen's house, was fantastic. Had a lovely time visiting with my mother and sister and nieces. And
celebrating Mother's 80th birthday was lovely.
Mother's 80th birthday as well. Lucky that she's around and still in pretty good health.
Well, and it was very nice to see very, very old and good friends of hers that have known us since we were quite young.
Quite young, yes. And none of us are quite young anymore.
Not anymore. But it was very, very a great time, and some great wines were opened throughout the, as I said, 5 days of celebrations, because, you know, Bacchus and Beery doesn't want to do anything in one day when you do it in 5 days.
Well, no, of course not, especially when it comes to wine. So let's sort of change subjects here. We're going to be back out in wine country in the middle of January for a few weeks, working on our wine project and a few other things. There's a wine convention we'll be attending. But I came across an article that was 10 things to do in Napa Valley besides drink wine.
Yeah, because after a Christmas, some of us may be wined out and we need a break before New Year's happens.
Exactly. And it also, if you travel out to Napa, and there's, you know, things like this to do in Sonoma as well and other wine regions, it can make for a, you know, a better, maybe more fun and well-rounded trip if you got other things on your agenda other than waking up every morning at the crack of dawn and start drinking wine.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all.
So why don't you tell us what to do in Napa?
Well, one of the things that when our son was looking into winemaker school and deciding that that was what he was going to do, I took him out to Napa. And one of the experiences we had that was really fantastic was we went to Round Pond, which, of course, is a winery, but they also have an olive oil experience, which was really spectacular. So they make a lot of olive oils at Round Pond, and a lot of wineries have olive trees in Napa and Sonoma and either create their own olive oils or have olive oil makers come and harvest the olives from their trees. But it's a really interesting experience to see how the olive oil is milled. And
there's also an art to tasting olive oil, just like wine tasting.
And an art to tasting olive oil, exactly. And sort of the funny thing with olive oil is it can have sort of peppery, spicy notes, and you put it in on your tongue, you know, a little bit, and then you sort of suck it like you would air, like you would, you know, tasting a lovely Cabernet like the one we're drinking now. And then you swallow it, and supposedly the more that you cough, the better the olive oil. A three cough olive oil is pretty spectacular.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you want to do, you can do olive oil tastings in Sonoma County as well. But if you're in the town of Hillsburg, you know, that's our town that we love so much out there. You can go to the Hillsburg Olive Oil Company and taste many olive oils from different wineries and blends of the grapes from different wineries, or olives, excuse me.
Olives, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of fun because you can find sometimes olive oil from your favorite wineries, vineyards. And
certainly one of my favorite olive oils is from Kelly Fleming Wines.
Yes.
That's a fabulous olive oil.
It is. Another thing you can do is take a cooking class. And, of course, wine country is known for its cuisine as well. And I know, Donna, you and I took a cooking class in Tuscany when we were on a wine trip there, and that was really spectacular. These classes are usually, you know, very low-key. They're not intimidating. Nobody's trying to prove they're the world's next great chef. And, you know, you learn a lot, and usually you drink a lot of wine as well. So in Napa Valley, you have the Silverado Cooking School. Of course, the Culinary Institute of America, the CIA, offers cooking classes, as do, you know, a few others like the Oxbow Market. And I know a couple of wineries, Whitehall Lane.
Does cooking, yes.
Does just some really nice, you know, Italian cooking classes. And so, you know, cooking is a whole lot of fun, and it goes with wine, and enhancing your cooking skills with a little wine country cuisine is always a great idea. So another thing is, as they say here, discover the mud. So up until the 60s and into the 70s, Napa Valley, especially northern Napa Valley, was more known for its hot springs and mud baths than it was for wine. And so up around Calistoga, you've got the Calistoga Ranch Spa, you've got Indian Springs, and a couple of these where the native Wapo Indians first started this mud practice that has detoxifying benefits. And, you know, you can get all sorts of mud wraps and, you know, exfoliations and body massage and all that. So, you know, that's kind of fun.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't know if our listeners really realize how close, when you're in Sonoma or Healdsburg, Santa Rosa, how close you are to the coastline. You're about 30 or 45 minutes from the coast. And some fun stuff to do in Sonoma is they have a cheese trail. They make lovely cheeses out there. And you can do the Marin or Sonoma County cheese trail. You can go out to Nick's Cove in Tomales Bay for oysters and champagne. I just happen to know that Wednesdays are half-price champagne day, so I hear. So
sparkling wine.
Sparkling wine, excuse me. So every bottle of sparkling wine is half price. You can also go see the seals at Bodega Bay. That's actually where Alfred Hitchcock filmed his movie The Birds.
Interesting.
Yes, and they have apples. Gravenstein apples are delicious out there. There's a little shop in Sebastopol called Mom's Apple Pie. And they make homemade apple pies from the Gravenstein apples, and it's delicious. And the redwoods are very close in Sonoma also. So hiking and biking, especially in the Armstrong Redwood Reserve, is
easy
fabulous.
For you to say.
No, not so much now. You can zip line the redwoods if you go to Occidental, which is not very far from Healdsburg.
No,
how far?
Probably about 30 minutes.
Right. You can do Sonoma canopy tours and zip line through the redwoods, which our winemaker son did do. He said it was worth being a little frightened because it was so gorgeous.
Yeah. And last but not least on this, and there's lots of other things to do as well, is for art lovers, a lot of wineries have tremendous art exhibits, just really beautiful sculptures at the winery. Some have art in the winery. I know one of my favorite ones last year was at Turnbull Winery, and they had a big exhibit of original Ansel Adams black and white photography that was just mind-blowing. When I started college, I wanted to be a photographer, and Ansel Adams was my hero. So to see just rows and rows of Ansel Adams originals was pretty amazing. But a number of the wineries out there are known for their art collections, both on their lawns and inside, depending on the kind of art that they're trying to focus on.
Well, you know, I just think we ought to point out, obviously we have been pointing out, but just continue to point out that, you know, for those people that are going out there, maybe a group, not everyone's so into wine, there's a lot of other things to do in wine country other than tasting wine.
Right. And maybe our guest, Suzanne, could have some insights on that as well. Well, we're going to go to break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Suzanne Pfeiffer-Pavitt of Pfeiffer-Pavitt Date Night Wines. See you on the other side of the break.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
If you are a dreamer aspiring to realize your dreams, join host Michael Friedlander for Dreamers, Winners, and Making a Difference. For Michael, to be a winner doesn't mean you must have finished first or must have great wealth, fame, and lots of toys. Instead, it means you must have realized your dreams without cheating or acting unethically. It means you must have made a difference for the better in the lives of those you've touched. Tune in to Dreamers, Winners, and Making a Difference live every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
What kind of world do you want to live in? Should we continue down our current path, or is there a better way? Together we can change the world. We must start with ourselves, then we can future-proof our homes, businesses, and communities. Many people don't realize it, but most of our society's biggest problems can be solved using current technology. My name is Shane Wolf, and I want to help you understand what you can do right now to make a difference while saving money, reducing your environmental impact, and improving the health of yourself and the people around you. Join me for Future Proof Radio, and let's build a better world.
Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Bacchus and Berry Wine Radio. To reach Donna and Roger Berry or this week's guest, please call into our show at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to Roger at BacchusandBerry.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, welcome back. Joining us now, we have Suzanne Pfeiffer-Pavitt of Pfeiffer-Pavitt Date Night Wine. Suzanne, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Happy Boxing Day.
Yeah, the pleasure's ours. Thank you, and happy Boxing Day to you as well. We've got a lot of fun things to talk about. Why don't we start by telling us a little bit about your wine that we're enjoying, the Cabernet here. It's just really opened up beautifully. And then we'll talk a little bit about holiday traditions and some other fun stuff.
Absolutely. Well, Pfeiffer-Pavitt Date Night Wine is a collaboration of my husband, Shane Pavitt, and myself. Pfeiffer is my maiden name, and Pavitt is my married name. After a few, unsuccessful attempts at trademarking, it was actually my husband's idea. He said, let's just call it Pfeiffer-Pavitt. It's your project. You're going to drive and lead this next adventure of our life into the wine business. So Pfeiffer-Pavitt, a little bit of a mouthful, kind of second, third grade phonics, but once you get it, you've got it. And that is our brand. We decided that we'd like to have something with a little more levity, a little more playfulness to an otherwise very serious couple of wines, and we added Date Night. The idea to buy just under 24 acres of undeveloped land in the Napa Valley in Calistoga back in 1999 and develop it from ground up, that idea was hatched on our weekly date night. And Shane and I have had a commitment to a date night since our courtship way back in the beginning, and we've maintained that. So Pfeiffer-Pavitt Date Night Wine is kind of an ode to and reminder for us. It's now our family business, but we still maintain a weekly date night, I'm very proud to say. And we currently produce two different wines. What you and Donna are enjoying in the studio there is the 2011. That is our Pfeiffer-Pavitt Date Night Cabernet Sauvignon here from the Napa Valley. We made, right at 800 cases of that wine or so, and that is our largest production to date, a very full-bodied, classic Napa Valley Cabernet. For those listeners who love a Napa Cab, it is all of those things that you know and love. Full-bodied, grippy, wonderful tannins that give it that full body, but nice, soft, velvety finish. And at Pfeiffer-Pavitt, we're very focused on making balanced wines that are approachable in their youth, but that continue to get better with age. We're also very focused on making food-friendly wines. We're big foodies here. I'm known to say probably too often that I think most of the world's problems could be solved over a great meal and a beautiful bottle of wine. So food-friendly wines are super important to us. This particular blend is a 98% Cabernet Sauvignon and just about 2% Petit Verdot, all organically farmed. And we do, for those listeners that want the nitty gritty detail, I'll just give the highlights, and that is we do an all French oak program. Depends. You know, winemaking is very much equal parts science and art, and so each year it is up to us to decide with our winemaker and as a team what that barrel profile will be. But we're anywhere from 60% to 80% new French oak, and then reusing a barrel the alternate years. So that's just the highlights of the Cabernet. And then the other wine that we make, which you also have and perhaps we'll save for a little later, is the Pfeiffer Paddock Date Night Sauvignon Blanc. That is 100% Sauvignon Blanc made in a 100% stainless steel approach. This is not your average bare Sauvignon Blanc. I try to maintain my objectivity, but this is feedback from all of our avid followers. And the Sauvignon Blanc is a little bit more of what people would associate as a Bordeaux Blanc, even referencing sometimes a bit of a Sancerre. It is a full-bodied Sauvignon Blanc, bright, crisp, pineapple acidity on the finish, but it's got a lot more verve and viscosity on a little more full mouth feel. So it too is yummy, quite lovely. And we make about 500 or so cases of that wine. Also sustainably farmed fruit here from the Napa Valley. And first vintage for Sauvignon Blanc was 2011, so that's a pretty new project for Pfeiffer Paddock Wines. And then backing up the Cabernet Sauvignon, our very first vintage was 2005. So we just celebrated our 10th harvest this past fall. So very exciting.
Congratulations. Thanks. On that. So does on the Cabernet, does all the fruit come from one vineyard? Or
yes,
do you
it
have
does. We are a single source estate vineyard in Pope Valley. I know that you and Don are very familiar here, your home away from home in the Napa Valley. But as a crow flies, a nice southern reference, from my property, it's just over the next hill. And Pope Valley is just a wonderful, we think, very much a Bordeaux-type climate. You get the great heat that you do from the Napa Valley, but you also get some of that thermal cooling air from the coast that comes in and lingers. So we get a really nice, long growing season. Our typical harvest for the Cabernet Sauvignon is late October, and I believe even a couple of times we've went right into the first day of November. So really long growing season. And then the Sauvignon Blanc is just down the road from that. So we're pretty partial to that region. Also a state all from single source vineyard for the Sauvignon Blanc as well.
I see. Yeah, one of the things I notice on this wine is And I have to take a little issue with what you said. I don't get the grippy tannins. I get a real suppleness and a really, velvety mouthfeel.
Well, wonderful. Well, and maybe that's a difference in terminology. For me, a little grippy tannin is it's got some hook spot to it. It's got some hold up, and it's going to last. If the tannins are too soft, then they disappear and it doesn't have ageability. So not referring to it in a negative way, but yes, thank you. I think the velvety finish is what has brought many people to just absolutely loving it. And that's a 2011, quite youthful as Cabernets go.
Yeah, and it was a cool year too, so your acids were a little higher and that sort of stuff. But yeah, the reason I brought that up is those of our listeners that, when they hear tannins and they think about those, over-extracted, mouth-drying, yeah, blah, blah, kind of tannins. This is not that kind of tannin. This is much softer and velvetier.
Well, we describe those tannins that are too hard to take as sweaters on your teeth.
Boy,
so
that's
you feel
a,
it.
That's,
it just grabs you and kind of overtakes. Our philosophy is to make amazing wine that's approachable, that will if you will intrigue and dazzle the youthful drinker, someone who's new, not necessarily young in age, but someone younger in age, but someone who is newer and still exploring their palate, as well as impress those that have been drinking Cabernets, from around the world for many years. So the idea is to give it great balance, great, you know, great strength of character to it. But as you describe, and I believe as well, that nice, soft, velvety finish, which I think allows our female audience, both for our wine as well as our male audience and customers, to equally enjoy the wine. I don't want to stereotype, but a lot of times I host women who say, "Oh, you know, I'll just have the Sauvignon Blanc. I'm not a red wine drinker. It's too this or it's too that." And I would say 9 times out of 10, if they decide to try the Cabernet, they're absolutely wooed with that soft finish. So that's something I'm very, very proud of, and that's what we strive to do, is have that balance year to year.
Well, I think in this 2011, it's you've really hit it well. Really hit it well.
Thank you.
We'll get back to the wines in a little bit, and sure, how people can get the wines. But since we're Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, tell us a little bit about what Christmas is like in Napa Valley, and especially up in Calistoga, the northern end where you are.
Well, it's an absolute picture-perfect day that folks from all over the country would envision. It's bright and clear and sunny. It's about 57, 58 degrees. We've had some wonderful rains, which were needed and celebrated. So you've still got some moisture on the leaves, and really how the light's raking through. It just couldn't be more beautiful. The vines we've obviously finished harvest a few months ago. The vines are all shutting down now, and the view is just one of kind of is more of a restful view. The full winter has not set in. I mean, California winters aren't really, really winters, but here in Calistoga, I mean, I think the coldest we get is maybe we might get in the high 30s, but it's just that perfect, beautiful day, more like a fall day for a lot of the rest of the country. For us, Christmas is not too dissimilar to most of your listeners. We had a beautiful, a wonderful, blessed day yesterday with family. And we do kind of break off on Christmas and do a little bit different, something different on the meals. We have the opportunity to be in California, so we had an amazing meal of mussels made with our Sauvignon Blanc, and then paired, starting with a little bit of bubbles and a little bit of the Sauvignon Blanc for dinner, with an amazing sourdough baguette. And it's not the typical Christmas meal for everyone, but it is something that we do every so often. But then we have to maintain my southern roots and finish that with a little red velvet cake for dessert. It's just apropos for living in a house with the matriarch being from Georgia.
Yeah. small town Georgia at that.
Exactly. Very so, small town. The only thing I left out yesterday was I grew up, if you had the red velvet cake, you always had some homemade dill pickles on the side. I don't exactly know why, other than perhaps it was the salty and the sweet. The pickles tend to get left off in our household because we are such the wine drinkers, and usually dill pickles and wine don't typically pair well together, so we leave that off. But pretty classic, beautiful day. Unlike some of the listeners and our customers, the kids are out playing outside and enjoying the outside weather because it is so beautiful. And we're just kind of coming down from the craziness of the harvest and finishing up. The wines are racked. They're sleeping and aging in the barrels at this point, and it's, for most of my counterparts and most of the Napa Valley, it's a very restful, rejuvenating time, a quiet time for us between now and, let's say, late January, early February, when spring will start peeking its head out occasionally and a little bud break may start occurring. So this is just a time of gathering, rejuvenating, and getting prepared for the new year and all the exciting adventures the wine world brings in the new year.
And, this is a great time for people to come out and visit wine
country. Fantastic time.
It maybe is not as exciting as harvest and not as beautiful as when the mustard's in bloom, you know, in 90 days from now. But winemakers like yourself have time to spend with guests.
No, absolutely, Roger. It's a quiet time, and, you know, the craziness of the harvest, because during harvest, you know, Mother Nature is fully in charge. You can't plan every step of it. Again, I made the reference earlier, wine is equal part art and science, and Mother Nature has, we think we're going to guide things and control it, but we are truly at the mercy of how harvest will go by nature. And it becomes a bit of a crazy, you're a little bit on edge and trying to be prepared for every scenario. And if you're making both red and white wine, the timing on both of those is different. And so, although we love to have people come during that time of year, it is an incredibly busy and can be a little stressful for the vintners at that time. Right now, as quiet, you will get undivided attention, can come and see all of the inner workings of, well, for us, a small family-owned winery. And I think that if you're really looking to have a really in-depth, kind of genuine experience, and by the way, not have to have reservations for most of the dining establishment weeks in advance, between now and, you know, early February is just a brilliant time to visit.
Yeah, sometimes it'll be cold and wet, but if you really want the, you know, attention and, mm-hmm. and the ability, you know, to learn and mm-hmm. and experience, this is a fantastic time. We've just got about a little over a minute before we go to break, and so tell us about your new tasting room, and if we run over, we'll catch it on the other side of the break.
All right. Well, we have a humble establishment here on the northeastern side of Silverado Trail, 1 mile outside of downtown Calistoga, and it is a remilled, recycled 100-year-old redwood barn that we found someone was tearing down about 5 miles from here. We helped take it down, disassemble, and then brought it back here to our property, remilled every piece of wood, and we have a board and batten redwood, a very traditional-looking barn on the outside. Our philosophy is recycle, repurpose, and remill, so we've reused it's got a classic vernacular-style roof with tin roofing, and we've reused that inside. The walls are insulated with recycled blue jeans, and I'll leave a few things for surprise so that you're still enticed to come and visit, but one of the things that people really love and talk about is we have a fallen piece of 100-year-old black walnut about 14 feet long is our tasting table that hangs from the ceiling in our tasting room. So that is usually a big conversation piece. The most important thing for us in our tasting room is you come as strangers but leave as friends. So the whole purpose is to sit down and have one-on-one conversation in a very warm and inviting environment and enjoy some fabulous wine. I mean, who would say no to that?
Well, exactly. So we're going to take a break here, and we'll be back with Suzanne on the other side of the break and talk more about date night.
Thank you.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Families today face unique challenges. Marriage, parenting, and family forms have changed a lot in the last century. Family Matters with Dr. Virginia Collin will focus on building and maintaining healthy family relationships. We will discuss marriage, divorce, family mediation, parenting, lifestyles, and mental health, all kinds of family matters. Our show will feature guest experts and your participation, too. You can listen to Family Matters live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Boomers Rock Radio with Tom Mack is ready to entertain, enlighten, and educate. Our show is all about quality of life, fitness, mental health, nutrition, self-improvement, finance, and more. As you grow older, you may actually have more questions. Tom is here to help. He'll invite experts from many facets of health,
business, and life to bring the answers to you. Make Boomers Rock Radio your weekly stop on the Voice America Variety Channel every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific. Join us and improve your life.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Bacchus and Berry Wine Radio. To reach Donna and Roger Berry or this week's guest, please call into our show at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to Roger at BacchusandBerry.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. We have Suzanne Pfeiffer-Pavitt with us from Pfeiffer-Pavitt Date Night Wines, a small boutique winery that makes about 1,300 cases of wine a year, and the kind of people we like to talk about because it's all handcrafted, handmade wines. So, Suzanne, tell us about the name Date Night. You sort of alluded to it a couple of times, but I know it's a bit more important to the wine story than just you and Shane have date nights.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, Shane and I did not come from the wine business. No family members in it. We pretty much we're both consumers, shall we say. And I certainly did not come from the wine business. I grew up in the Southern Baptist Bible Belt, so that was not really something that you do. Wasn't wine growing or vineyard management in that part of the world. So our paths brought us together over a great glass of wine, a chance meeting down in Southern California where my husband is from, and we started a pretty quick courtship of about 4 months, and then he flew to Georgia and asked my dad to marry me. And we started our weekly date night. I was in the IT world, traveling all across the country, living more on a plane than not. And so for us, once a week date night meant a concerted, planned effort to meet somewhere, usually in the country. Occasionally it was, somewhere more exotic. But date night really was the basis and the foundation of our relationship, of setting aside and scheduling that once a week time. And it wasn't always the same day. It depended on your work schedule, depended on where I was in the country. But we would meet up, typically always having a great bottle of wine and great food. As I had said earlier, that is a couple of our passions. And so it was on one of our more elaborate date nights that we went to Tuscany. I know that you and Don are fans as well. And we didn't go to a cooking class, but what we were doing was eating and drinking our way through Tuscany and happened to extend our trip in Montalcino, Montepulciano, and just absolutely were captivated with the lifestyle and Italian people really, they know how to blend life with food and wine. And a little bit of the story is that at that time, Frances Mays had just come out with the book Under the Tuscan Sun, and sure, we were being hopeless romantics reading that book and eating and drinking, and it was just the idyllic time. And we were at a restaurant one night and started talking. Back in those days, you came up with a 5-year plan. I know I'm dating myself, but at the time you came up with a 5-year plan, and it was, if we could live anywhere and do anything, where would we live and what would we do? Not thinking about all of the obstacles to any of those options. And Shane took a piece of paper and wrote down, his 10 things, and I took a piece of paper and wrote down my 10 things. And lo and behold, one of the similarities was we both said we'd own a little vineyard, make a boutique wine somewhere in the world, and that started what would ultimately become Pfeiffer-Pavitt Date Night, that conversation. And over the course of the next year, we spent, probably once a month going away for the weekend on a weekend date night, looking at properties all up and down the western half of the United States, you know, which were predominantly more geared towards wine making and grape growing at the time, and decided that we were going to buy a piece of property, throw caution to the wind, and see if we could make a life out of this. And you know, being forthright and honest with the listeners, my husband maintained his day job because someone had to do that. And I went off on this great adventure to find us a piece of property and start developing it. We developed the property here at Pfeiffer Pavitt from ground up. No power, no water, no infrastructure. It was just a blank canvas ready for someone to paint a picture. And bought the property and then set about the kind of long task of getting permits and getting everything going for that. And then decided to start the brand. And so for us, in trying to come up with a name for what would ultimately be our family business, it just was so perfect and fitting that we would have a little homage to the fact that this idea and this dream was all started on our date night. So we felt pretty strongly that that the brand itself had to have the family name in it because it would be a family tradition, but to have a little more playful, or we like to say fanciful, name of date night. So the meaning behind that is really near and dear to us and is what got this whole project and this whole lifestyle off the ground in 1999 is actually when we bought the property.
So what were the biggest challenges that now that you look back, that you faced from, you know, transitioning from, mm-hmm. you know, a marketing executive to, okay, now I'm going to go plant grapes?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I like to say, and I'm often repetitive in saying, it's sexy farming, but it's still farming. So
exactly.
Those challenges, whether you're a, you know, potato farmer or a grape farmer or corn grower, you know, a lot of those things are very similar, but wine growing, grape growing and the wine industry is a little sexier. I would say that by and large, the most challenging thing was the unknown, because the wine business is just so romantic and it's just so magical, and anyone who jumps out and pursues this does it for the passion of it, and that you get to really put your heart and soul into creating something every year. And my experience is that I can't even count on one hand unhappy customers. When people are drinking wine and visiting the wine country, they're in a great mood. They're happy. They're excited. They want to learn more. And by and large, they are truly, you know, wanting to live vicariously through you. So, you know, we started out into this pretty naive to the wine business. I mean, I was a businesswoman, but naive to, let's take, for example, timing. So anyone else in the world, you want to start a business and you're going to, let's say, create a product, that product can probably be created in a few months. Let's say that there's some kind of holdup, maybe a year. In the Cabernet Sauvignon world, you get all excited and you have an amazing, you know, harvest, and you bring it back and it's aged in the barrel for 18 months and then you put it in the bottle. You're waiting for 3 years. I think that is the hardest thing to explain to people is how capital intensive it is, just from a perspective that you make a product and then you're waiting 3 years. So we are always looking back 3 years to when we're releasing the Cabernet Sauvignon. So that was something that was very different to the information technology business, which is real time, everything's happening, everything's changing. The farming aspect and the unknown, that certainly has its excitement and changes each year. But I think the waiting, the really having to be patient, because you cannot rush the art of fine winemaking. It takes time.
It does. It does. You know, you're talking about the glamour part of farming, and as you know, our listeners have followed our little project. I know one of the glamour things Donna learned was that when we were out in our vineyards and testing grapes out there with our a Home Depot bucket, you know, getting cluster samples, right? And so she's crushing the grapes so we can get juice samples, and it's kind of hot late morning, and she takes her hands and wipes it on her face, and then all the bees came.
Yes.
It's like, oh no.
Yeah, the glamorous part. You know, we
just smeared sugar into her hair, and here come the bees.
Oh, exactly. The bees, and you know, all of the parts that people, they, you can tell them, but until you experience it, you know, you're sampling, juice that's really young, and you know, you're drinking out of Dixie cups, not, you know, Riedel Crystal. it's the day to day, but it's what makes it exciting too. But it is hard work. There's as I said, there's just no way to rush it. You can't skip any of the steps. You must adhere to, and as you guys, I'm sure, are learning, one of the things that at Pfeiffer Pavitt we really pride ourselves on is having something year to year with consistency.
Right.
So having a consistency amongst the wine that your supporters and loyal followers and customer ambassadors come to know and love, which requires you to be very consistent in the way that you harvest, the way that you farm, the way that you make the wine, so that you don't upset or surprise your customers, and that you can grow that loyal following over time. So there is a lot of the discipline in it, as I'm sure you guys are finding out.
Well, but there's also a big difference with what you're doing and what other boutique wineries do as far as year to year, because you're still going to get some vintage variation and some other things versus, you know, maybe some less expensive Cabernets,
right.
You know, $15 Cabernets that are recipe wines. They're going to taste the same every year, but you're looking for consistent art. When you see an Andy Warhol painting, it's not the same painting, but you know it's Andy Warhol. When you see Salvador Dali, it's not the same painting, but you know it's Salvador Dali.
Yes. And that is, that's a key point for us. You know, a lot of times we have been incredibly blessed and fortunate to have amazing followers around the country, and we sell out of our wine both of our wines every year. And part of that is, you know, we could just make more, and that's a very popular question from people that learn about us, or if they contact us and whatever, you know, maybe it's late in the vintage and we don't, you know, we've sold out. Well, why don't you just make more? Well, I'm quoted as saying pretty often, more is just more. More is not better. And so when, as a small producer, one of the things that we're very focused on, as you were alluding to, is that consistency of quality, which may require us to drop fruit. We hand farm everything, and if the fruit does not meet the specifications that we require for that fine wine, then it doesn't go into it. For us as a small producer, we make what Mother Nature gives us, but we only make the absolute best of that. So we don't, you know, there's not adding, there's not manipulating. We truly are old school in our approach to winemaking and believe that the wine is actually made in the vineyard. It's not made in the winery. The winery is where we gently cajole it into the bottle, but we're doing the minimal, least amount of manipulation possible when it comes back to the vineyard, which requires the fruit to be absolutely spectacular when it comes in. So for us, I often say it's the trifecta. You know, like, oh, who makes the wine? Or are you, as the owner, are you involved? And I said, well, this is the way it goes for us at Pfeiffer Pavitt. It is three parts to give you a solid foundation and balance. You have the grower, who is pivotal and at the core of it. You have the winemaker, and you have the vintner. The three components make up a beautiful wine that's very well balanced. So it's time, it's patience, It's the artistic expression, and then it's the passion behind that. So, I mean, it's an amazing business to be in. I'm incredibly blessed and excited to have made this change in my life and be in the wine business. I mean, who doesn't want to be in the wine business? You two jumped right in.
Well, exactly. So we just have a couple minutes left. So tell us how our listeners can find your wines online. Tell us about your wine club.
Okay. Well, we have a new website that is www.pfeifferpavittwine.com. And I'm sure that you can go to the link for the show and get the exact spelling. You can also Google date night wine if you just can't get the tongue twister of Pfeiffer Pavitt. So you may go to our website, and it is first come, first serve on availability. You can order wine there. You can also learn about and request a visit if you're coming out to the Napa Valley. We are by appointment and referral. Certainly the listeners for our radio segment today are welcome to come. Just say you heard me on the program, and we'd love to host you. So you could set up an appointment to come and visit with us. And then, yes, we do have a very simple wine program. It was designed quite frankly, was driven by some of our consumers who said, I don't want to miss out on a single vintage. How can I be sure that I get your wine each year? And we came up with what we call the Verona Society. The Verona Society says if you're part of the Verona Society, there's no charge or cost to belong. It is an allocation. We are a maximum one case allocation of either our Cabernet or our Sauvignon Blanc. The Verona Society Romeo is the Cabernet. The Verona Society Juliet is the Sauvignon Blanc. Or if you are just an absolute romantic and fine wine lover, you can be Romeo and Juliet. You'll get a case of the Cabernet in the fall and a case of the Sauvignon Blanc in the spring, and you'll be set for once a month date night almost the whole year. I mean, it's a perfect thing.
Well, it sounds fantastic, and the Verona Club and the Romeo and Juliet part, you know, plays in perfectly with the romance
of the
date night concept. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you next week. And Donna?
Until next year and our next glass of wine.
Next year and our next glass of wine. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Thank you for joining us this week for Bacchus and Berry Wine Radio. Roger and Donna Berry will be back again next Friday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope your weekend gets started with a beautiful glass of wine.